join your host Des Hamilton to find out exactly how to say goodbye to being poor and hello to being rich.
Welcome to the Goodbye Poor Hello Rich Show with me, your man Des Hamilton. Look, you'll notice today, get in there, I'm standing up. I've even got a bit of production value going on. There's a light there. Everything should be ticking over as we get more and more professional because this podcast is not going anywhere. I'm investing as much as I possibly can in terms of time, revenue, money, reputation, the lot. It goes up because it's dawned on me, right? I like talking. For those of you that have been following me for 2 years, this might not be a surprise to you, but I enjoy talking. So why not make it something that makes me money? So that's what I'm going to do from now on, which I've been doing from the start, to be fair, but I do want to focus my mind on it. Anyway, let's get into the show, shall we? Thank you to our sponsors, Seller Amsas. Always great to have you on board, and we're entirely grateful. This week, it's an interesting one, because I know a lot of you are going to be interested in here. We've got accountancy. We're talking tax. We're talking financial advice. Not from this guy. I am not the person that you want to be talking to about financial advice or anything to do with tax or implications of formalities of legal entities. What we have got instead is we've got Ellis in. Ellis is an accountant who isn't your usual run-of-the-mill accountant. This is what's so brilliant about e-commerce in 2024. Bloody hell, you can go back 3-4 years since everything started taking over. And we realized that the world was such a small place, it doesn't matter where you're located anymore in order for you to provide a service. Ellis is a perfect example. He went traveling and then decided, you know what, I want to be an accountant. So set up his business while he was traveling. And then by the time he came home, he was an outfit with all sorts of clients ready to scale up. But I'll let him tell the story. Most importantly, Ellis talks about the actual things that you need if you're doing a startup in e-commerce. I don't care if you're just an Amazon FBA seller who's been dabbling for a couple of months. I don't care if you're a TikTok shop affiliate who's just run out their first few videos. None of that matters. What matters is your paperwork. The thing that will stop your business in its tracks as soon as possible is a letter from the HMRC telling you you've been doing something wrong and you now owe thousands of pounds. I'm not scaremongering here. It's a reality. You will owe tax on everything you do once you hit certain thresholds. And the concept of dabbling around, because this is just a side hustle, this is a concept we need to wipe from our brain. It's not a side hustle. It's a secondary business. If you're bringing money in, this is a secondary business. You will be taxed accordingly. And it's something that people are falling foul of. Now, because it's never talked about, because it's not a very sexy topic, what's also happening is that people are not realizing the benefits that an accountant can provide you. The exemptions that certain things can do. For example, this new fancy light that I was just talking about, that got put on the business. The t-shirt that I've got with my logo on it, not this one, that one is something I can put through the business. Your mileage, the cup of coffee you're having when you're out doing retail arbitrage. There is so much you can do, but there is also so much you can't do. You cannot put an extension on your house and call it your business. Listen, let's get into the story. Let's get into the chat that I have with Ellis. I'll see you on the other side. You need to pay attention to this one, and I recommend this is one that you come back to time and time again. See you on the other side. Roll them! Right, Ellis, thank you so much for coming onto the show. Really lovely to meet you and really glad to have you here.
No worries, it's a pleasure.
Thank you. Right, we're going to treat this episode almost like a tax and accountancy special because everyone loves a tax and accountancy special, don't they, when they tune in?
Sounds exciting to me.
But we just had a chat about how it was you've come into owning your business, and I think people want to hear that. So let's go back again. I'm sorry to ask you twice. But yeah, tell us how you've got to where you've got to.
So during COVID, I was meant to go traveling. Obviously, those plans got cancelled. Everyone started to work from home. And I was like, there's an opportunity there because I worked in an accountancy company where it was very client-facing. You met your accountant in person. The typical like demographic or audience for your potential clients are living in your local area.
Yeah.
Everything switched from working from home on Zoom calls like this. And I was like, do you know what? What is the worst that can happen? And the reality is, I was in a very fortunate position where the worst that can happen is I had no mortgage, no kids, the business fails, I go and get another job.
Yeah.
So I saved up enough money to go traveling because that was going to get ticked off regardless. Handed my notice, went traveling for 6 months whilst starting an accountancy company, which is always a weird thing to say. It's probably the best personal decision I've made, but the worst business decision. From a point of view of, I'm traveling around Southeast Asia, trying to grow an accountancy company where you've got to try and earn the trust. There's a perception about accountants in terms of what they should do, what they should be like. Trying to break that misconception whilst not in the country was a challenge.
Yeah, I bet. When you say that, what do you mean? This almost like this stoic relationship, business, formal relationship, isn't it, really, between a client?
Yeah, very formal relationship. Shirt, tie, meet someone in person, call someone sir, and a lot of that bullshit. It's like, I don't want to do that. I did enough of that working for someone else. If I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, let me at least enjoy it and do it my way.
I've got to say, though, if I'm ringing you up and you're on my accountant and you're on a beach sipping something out of a coconut, I'm all for that. That'd be amazing.
The reality is, I thought everyone's going to be against it. People like the story, people like the background, and people buy into what we're trying to do and trying to do something different to your typical accountancy practices.
Yeah. Yeah. Lovely. Lovely. And you were traveling during COVID time?
The back end of COVID. So I started traveling in August 21. Come back in December. A lot of places were very strict in terms of letting me into the country, let me travel around, especially like Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Where it's obviously my first time in Thailand, and I was one of a handful of tourists allowed into the country.
Wow.
I was on the first plane that left, Cambodia, to go to Singapore. So I was on the news in Cambodia. Oh, which is strange.
That's amazing. What a story.
There's five people on the plane. Me and my girlfriend and three others, and we had pictures, and I was like, this is strange. I just want to go to Singapore.
And were you quarantining and things like that?
So it wasn't quarantine in Thailand for the first 24 hours. Well, we had to arrive on arrival. We had a COVID test, then had to quarantine for 24 hours. That got lost in translation. I arrive at the hotel. I'm walking around the hotel. All of a sudden, everyone's shouting. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, quarantine. I was like, okay. So I go back to the room. Same thing happened in Singapore. They have a different policy. You had to test yourself every 24 hours.
Wow.
And report on some app. But yeah. Different times, I guess.
Crazy when you look back at it like that, wasn't it? Wow, yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean, we got married in 2021, New Year's Eve 2021. So we had our stag do. And at that point, it was me and my brother and a load of our mates just went, look, we just want to go away. And everything was no booking needed, free cancellation. So we just thought, right, let's just book Tenerife 6 months into the future and we'll see what happens. And it was amazing. It was amazing. And everyone's so desperate for a holiday at that point as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I can't imagine.
Everyone took it to the extreme, which was like maybe more fun, I guess.
Exactly right. Exactly right. So you're trying to build a business while experiencing that. That's incredible.
Yeah, I was like, I never got the top chance to do it when I left university. Probably didn't have the money. And I was like, fuck it. I've got nothing else to lose. Something I want to do. So why not?
Yeah, yeah. So by the time you came back, what sort of state was everything in?
Business-wise?
Yeah.
Okay, not amazing.
Good point.
financially, not amazing. Business was struggling, not going to lie to you. Struggling to pick up clients. And then I started posting on LinkedIn. I realized that was a platform where it was quite formal. And I was like, perfect, let's go against the grain. And try and stand out from there, which worked, providing people, start businesses, young entrepreneurs, etc., with generally like advice they need to start a business, which is not particularly spoken about in the accountancy industry. So we spoke about more now, but wasn't then. Snowball effect, got one client, led to another client who introduced me to another one, etc., etc. to the point where we now have 5 members of staff and like 380, 390 clients.
Good for you. That's amazing.
Which, if I say that out loud, sounds strange. It feels almost surreal. But yeah, that is the reality of the situation.
In 3 years? Correct. Yeah. Wow. Brilliant. Brilliant. What a lovely position to be in when you can feel yourself getting more and more clients thinking, I can't do this, I can't do this. And now
it is a strange feeling employing people. Yeah, employing people is a strange feeling. It's like, okay, now you're part of the team. I'm now paying your mortgage.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, now it's a responsibility.
Yeah. Wow, bloody hell. This is grown up stuff. I mean, what, you're probably about 15 to 20 years younger than me. And I'm still not ready to hire anybody yet. It's just incredible. I love it.
I think that the best part is everyone who I've employed is older than me. Which again is a strange feeling because I'm the youngest person in the company.
Wow.
But I own the company.
Yeah. We've almost flipped, you know, because I've left a company where I was one of the younger people. And now I'm a 44-year-old in the world of social media. Honestly, it's ridiculous. I feel like everyone's dad. It's so strange. But everyone's like, yeah, I'm going to go out. I'm going to buy this car. I'm going to go to Dubai. What are you doing? But oh, I might have a loft extension. I might pay my mortgage. It's just a different world. What's really nice then is that you can really empathize with anyone starting a new business, can't you? You're still new enough in this game that when people are coming into this sort of this world where the world has shrunk because of Zoom calls and people's ideas of what, I think that's a really important point. People's ideas of what type of person fits what type of role is being flipped on its head as well. What sort of advice do you find yourself giving to people that may not have necessarily been given in your environment previously?
So people who got a business idea, all these people who I speak to do have full-time jobs. Mm. And it's making that transition. And it's like, what is the honest advice I'd give someone if they had this like side hustle sort of thing and they want to make a business out of it and do this full-time? Mm. That's a typical question I get. At what point do I do it? That sort of thing. My first honest advice is give yourself a runway. When I say that, I mean between 3 and 6 months of, if you didn't earn a penny from the business, you could still live and survive. The reason I say that is nothing's ever going to happen overnight. It's literally impossible, or you're part of 0.001% of people that will do something overnight.
Yeah.
That gives you breathing space. It gives you breathing space from a point of view of you can now attack this business for 3 to 6 months, 100% dedicate your time with no distractions. If it is a case of the business is earning money and it's a case of, do you want to leave your full-time job? Well, reverse engineer the whole thing. How much you physically need to survive per month? That's £2,000, £3,000, whatever that looks like. Well, actually, work in your business. What's your profit margins? So say, for example, you've got, I don't know, £1,000 worth of sales and you got, I don't know, 80% profit margin. So £800. Well, how much do you need minus your taxes, minus your expenses for your, you know, your software, your accounting fees, before I can actually take out that £2,000 and replace my full-time income? A lot of calculations are done behind that, the scenes behind that, something we do offer. But that's a typical two conversations I have is, what do you physically need to live on, and give yourself some runway and some time.
It's a really interesting point as well. How have you found you needing to dumb down's not the right way to phrase it. Simplify is a better way, isn't it? How often do you need to find yourself simplifying these terms? Because people like me, I've taken this for granted all my life. It's just that my tax and my pension and my national insurance, that's all taken care of. Someone else does that. I just get whatever I need to get and I can spend that as much as I want. But now I've never had a better financial education than I've had now in 2 years of doing this, because I'm aware of these things. But there's been many, many conversations where I've had to say to my accountant, can you talk to me like I'm 10? Because I really don't understand how I can draw money out without spiraling out of control with my child maintenance payments, with my tax over there. You know, it's how have you found your sort of language is changing when people come to you?
So coming from a corporate background, you, and as a chartered accountant, you taught very by the book. This is how you say things, it's the words, it's the terminology. And the reality is, most business owners, or 99% of the business owners, have no clue. And why should they? They're not taught the same things that I've been taught as an accountant.
No.
And it's a case of breaking things down as simple as possible for two reasons. So you can understand the advice I'm giving you, but also you actually understand what's going on. Because without that, it's a case of it's a one-way conversation. You're going to be left more confused and have no clarity or no direction in terms of what I'm actually saying to you. And there's no benefit to that. There's no benefit to that whatsoever, because I understand it from an accounting point of view, but if you don't understand what I'm actually saying to you, it's like speaking another language. There's zero point in that.
And it comes down to your responsibility as well, doesn't it?
Really? Yeah. We have a responsibility to make sure you understand the advice that we're giving you. So break it down as simple as possible. People like simplicity. I love simplicity. Make things simple so I can understand it, and then happy days.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That's brilliant. So we've got the runway. I think that's great advice as well, by the way, because we were trying to make 30% compounding growth in everything that we did, and we started with £200. So 60 quid in month one, you know, and then even month two, it was more like 80 quid and blah, 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 blah. We didn't start actually talking big money. But at the same point, from my experience, because we were acutely aware of this £1,000 threshold we could have, this tax-free £1,000 side hustle money, we just thought, well, let's get a grand and then we'll start dealing with it. Looking back, that was a huge mistake, of course. Our paperwork was all over the place. What sort of a basic advice would you give people that are just starting out like that?
Honestly, the training allowance of £1,000, yes, I'd still utilize it. I'd use that as a test of to see if actually is this a business. Because a lot of people have these ideas of saying I'm doing X, Y, Z, but actually if it makes some money, what's the point in it?
Yeah.
I would say utilize it before you actually then have a conversation, sit down and think, actually, is this a business? Is this going to make money? If so, perfect. Then it's a case of, is it sole trader, partnership, limited company? What is next for you? It is essentially get everything in order from day one, from a point of view of paperwork, in case HMRC ever come asking, because if you've got no paperwork, you don't have to back anything up. Okay, so they'll throw the book at you and say good luck.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, you don't get second chances, do you? It's a case of, yeah, the responsibility is on you as a person making money to know what to do with it.
Yeah, and it's a case of that's not really spoken about, but keeping track of everything from receipts to mileage logs to income, invoice, etc., is really, really important, because without it, you've got no proof of anything.
No. No. And there's no easy way of doing it, is there? There's no shortcuts on that. It's you've got these days, you've got notes apps on a phone, you've got voice recording things. It's easy to say, right, I drove 15 miles into the city to go and source some products. You know, there's no problem with that. And I think, again, we can get into this, actually. I think there's a lot of efficiencies that people are missing out on because of that as well. People might not necessarily know that you can buy a coffee while you're out dealing with some wholesalers, or you can put your mileage through the books. Nobody necessarily knows that, do they?
Yeah, to me, it's about maximizing the expense that you can put through the company to minimize that tax bill. Ultimately, yeah. That's the aim for most people. Why not pay as little tax as you have to?
Yeah,
I don't mind saying that. I'm pretty sure everyone else doesn't mind saying that. Maybe for accountants, maybe a bit blasé, but it's the honest answer. Why pay a penny more in tax than you need to?
That's what most of your clients want to know, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's a case of, as an accountant, I need to fully understand your business from what you do on a day-to-day basis, so I can see and spot potential tax savings, expenses that you can capitalize on to minimize that. That tax bill and maximize the amount of money you can take out of the company.
Yeah.
As your business grows.
What are the classics that you find yourself giving advice to where people go, oh, bloody hell, I didn't know I could do that? What sort of the obvious ones?
Your phone bill is a common one. Another one is like mileage or uniform. So as soon as you, so say for example, this t-shirt here, yes, it's a regular t-shirt. If I stick a company logo on it, it all of a sudden becomes a uniform.
Yeah.
Because I'm advertising my brand. People take advantage of that all the time. When I do it, 100%, I've got hoodies on with my business name on it. mileage. People don't understand how many business miles they do. So I think on apps like QuickBooks, I'll go into that a bit later, you can track your mileage on there. So you have your settings on your QuickBooks app to say, it's obviously business use, it'll track every single mile you do. And you simply swipe left or swipe right if it's business or personal.
Got you.
It's an expense.
Got you. Let's say, and we'll throw a few hypotheticals at you during this, I'm sure I would do, but let's say I want to drive up to see my in-laws who are 300 miles away, but there's also a mega shopping centre 5 minutes from them. What could I feasibly do, realistically, and we're going to, because everything about this chat, you and I both know it's going to be ethical and legal, so what's the best advice in that scenario? Would there be a portion away, or would it be a case of, no, the in-laws are the base, so you're going to see the in-laws as a separate thing, and then it's to travel from the in-laws to the place?
Yeah, that would be the honest answer. Yeah. It's a case of the purpose of that trip is to see the in-laws. So to and from the in-laws is disallowable, but from the in-laws is like your base to a shopping center, which you're going to look and potentially source products from. That trip is now allowable expense. So you can claim back as 45p per mile for your first 10,000 miles.
Okay. 10,000 miles is a lot as well. That's pretty good, isn't it? Great.
Yeah, so £4,500, it'll save you roughly from £900 in tax.
Well, that's pretty good. It all left out. Right. No, exactly right. One of the questions we get, this is a perfect example. My office, where we are here, I'm in the kitchen. When you have an office in your kitchen or where you are working as a retail supplier from your home, what sort of allowances would you be allowed to give in those scenarios?
Different angle, which I'm going to approach it at, which a common question I get asked all the time is people have started to buy, what do you call it, like garden offices
in
the garden. And they say, is that allowable expense? Now, HMRC ruling on this is if it's movable, if you can hypothetically collapse it, build it again, if you move property, it's a business asset, therefore business expense, so you can claim back the whole thing.
That's interesting.
If it's static, you can't move it, I wouldn't advise it putting it through the business, because then part of your home, if you used to sell it, belongs to the business, the HMRC won the taxes. Back to the initial question, can you claim your use of home, use kitchen as a business expense? Two methods which we commonly go through is the simplified expenses, which is £312 a year, which in reality is pennies. Alternatively, we'd get a square footage for the property, and then get your council tax, your mortgage, your all your home bills, and divide that by the square footage that you use for business. Then how many hours there is in a day, compared to how many hours you work from that area.
Yeah. So if, for example, you were going to use a spare bedroom in a 5-room house, that's a fifth of whatever it is you're living.
Correct. Yeah.
Makes sense. And it's when it comes to the decorations, I think like this stuff, this isn't wood. This is a sticky down wallpaper. There's an awful lot of holes behind it.
And these I didn't thought it was wood, not going to lie to you.
Man, the facade, I've ruined the facade. But this sort of stuff, because this is in my little zone, I put all that through the business. I'm not going to put the kitchen through the business. It's that, you know what you
mean. Yeah, there's a hosting a podcast, and part of that podcast is it's your intention to make it look a certain way.
Yeah.
Which is therefore a business expense. Completely fine putting it through the business.
Great stuff. I remember I was a copper for 8 years, and I used to say to like the kids on the street that no one expects you to know the law, but if your mum wouldn't like it, the chances are you need to look twice. You know, that's same sort of thing, right?
Correct.
If you're doing a washing machine and think, should I put this through the business, your mum wouldn't like it.
Yeah, the HMRC calling on that is if it's wholly and exclusively for the purpose of business, then it typically is a business expense. If there's not a duality of purpose and a duality of use, then it would be a business expense. If there's a personal benefit to it, then it's questionable.
Yeah, no, great. That all makes perfect sense. What are the common mistakes you see from people? Either when they've come to you and they said, I've been running for 9 months and the books are due in 3, or what sort of things do you often find that you're unraveling?
With Amazon sellers specifically, is VAT. Hitting that VAT threshold and what they can and can't reclaim VAT on. As an example, so obviously the threshold is £90,000. So for example, you receive a payout and that's £500. That could be £3,000 of a sales. We need to mark that as £3,000 of a sales, not £500, because there's refunds, there's disbursements, there's all sorts happened in that to get that £500.
Mm.
And it's digging deeper than just seeing the £500 in the bank to actually get the full amount of sales. So once they've passed that VAT threshold, that £90,000 in a 12-month rolling basis, they need to register for VAT. Say, for example, today, 20th of September, you breached the VAT threshold. You don't need to register for VAT today, tomorrow, the end of the month. You have until the end of the month, 1 month's grace, so that being October. So the 1st of November, you'd have to register for VAT.
Okay.
So there is a grace period. Now, a common thing is 1st November, in this example, is when you register for VAT. The previous 6 months, any UK-based services, accountancy fees, for example, you can reclaim your VAT back day on them. Any assets you purchased in the previous 5 years, computer equipment, which you've got a receipt for, you can reclaim the VAT on that. Wow. As well as any stock you hold as of that VAT reg date. So at first, that period, it could be quite significantly lower because you've got this backdated VAT that you can reclaim.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I've the first I've heard of that. That's a money way.
Other things people get wrong is not having a separate bank account for the business. So if it's a limited company, get a limited company bank account.
Mm.
If it's a sole trader, regardless, get a separate business bank account to run the business through. Simple reason is you want visibility of what's going on in the business. If you start mixing business and personal transactions, you cannot say with clarity how much is that business earning. Mm. It could be earning a lot of money. You have no idea because you're spending a lot of money personally. So that's the typical advice to give. Get yourself a business account. Get yourself an accounting software. QuickBooks being nice, cheap and easy and simple to use. They have a receipt capture app, which you can store your receipts on. Everything's then simplified and put into one app. You can see profitability, profit reports, see what's going on in the business. So yeah, that's typical mistakes I see.
Brilliant. That's a really good bit of advice. The accounting software is vital. There's apps for everything these days. And going back to what you were previously saying, so something like QuickBooks, that's receipt scanning, but also it helps you track your mileage and it helps you better map out your expenses, does it?
Yeah, so you connect your bank to the software. So the bank transactions will then appear in QuickBooks. So say, for example, you received the payment today, you can then mark it against the invoice because you can send your invoices from QuickBooks as well.
Yeah.
You can see who's paid you, who's not paid you, what expenses you had, where your total expenses are going, so where you're spending your money, and pull off profitability reports, which helps with like budgeting, planning, taxes, etc.
Yeah. And my general advice for this as well is because we're told as entrepreneurs, and you're told whoever your mentor is and all over the socials, when you get to a certain level, you can outsource bits, you can outsource your accountancy, you can outsource your bookkeeping, you can outsource your sourcing, all that stuff. But this kind of stuff, there is no outsourcing for it, is there really? If you're out and about and you're driving, why would you want to outsource what the mileage that you've just driven? You know,
there's certain things which you're always going to be responsible for, and that's keeping receipts. If you're out and about, you can't essentially outsource receipt capture. Yeah. And it's a case of getting into good habits from the very start. Because once you've got a picture of that receipt, fine, throw away. No interest in it.
Yeah.
And it's just a case of, it's just a simple picture. But also just tracking things, being fully aware of what's going on in your business, what you can and can't claim, and what you're actually doing to and give evidence of that.
Yeah, no, great. Going back to VAT, if somebody said to you, right, Ellis, I'm going to start a new business tomorrow, I've got high hopes for it, even though there's no proof of concept at this stage, they're going to say, I'm going to register for VAT early because that's what I want to do. What are the pros and cons of that approach?
It very much depends on what business you operate in.
Okay.
If you used to operate, say, Amazon FBA, for example, would I advise clients to register for VAT from day one? No. It eats into your profit margins. As soon as you become VAT registered, you need to source potentially different products because your products may not be profitable if you're VAT registered.
Yeah.
Other businesses, the first thing you need to do is look at your end user. If it's a B2B business, so take, for example, accountancy, I then look at my audience. Are most of my clients VAT registered? Probably not. Is it best for me to voluntary register for my business? Probably not, because what's going to happen is I become 20% more expensive overnight.
Yeah.
But if it's a B2B business where you operate with bigger businesses who are VAT registered, it makes zero difference to them, because the VAT that you charge them, they can reclaim.
Mm.
The benefit is you can reclaim your VAT and your expenses, which can make it slightly more profitable for your business.
Yeah.
Would advise it as a whole? Probably not.
Not for new startups.
I think it's an extra headache you don't really need.
Yeah, no, I agree. And as a new startup, your expenses are going to be so low for the first like year. You're not exactly going to be taking chairs.
You try and minimize everything. So it's an extra admin thing you don't really need at the start.
Yeah, no, great. In your experience, how often should a person like me be reviewing paperwork or auditing themselves? But just for ease.
As an accountant, I would say do your bookkeeping once a week.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take you much longer than 30 minutes to an hour. It's not a massive amount of time in the grand scheme of things per week. On a monthly basis, pull off profit and loss. And you may not understand in terms of what taxes you need to have. Your accountant should be advising you on that sort of thing. But you can then see off your profit and loss simply where you're spending money.
Yeah.
And it'd be surprising to everyone how many subscriptions they have, which they don't use.
Yes, that's certainly true.
Go through it with a fine tooth comb and say, actually, I'm actually using this, be honest with yourself. Yes, maybe nice to have, but am I maximizing the use out of it? If not, is there any point in having it? Save yourself some money.
Yeah, no, great. And the big question for every single young entrepreneur, let's say that this is a secondary business, they're going to say to you, how do I get money out? How can I pay myself? And we're talking tax thresholds here, aren't we?
Yeah. The first thing is sole trade limited company, which is best for yourself. And the honest answer is depends on your level of personal income.
Mm.
So hypothetically, you're in a job and you're earning, I don't know, what's the average? Is it 34,000?
Something like that, yeah.
I don't think it's that high in reality.
No, it's not.
Propped up.
It's ridiculous.
So you're earning £30,000 a year and you've got a side hustle. My first and honest opinion is unless you're making £20,000 plus to push you to a high rate taxpayer, it's best for you to be a sole trader up until that point.
Mm.
So until your business is earning a combined income with your PAYE income of £50,000 to push you to a high rate taxpayer, it's best to be a sole trader up until that point. Now, as a sole trader, how do you pay yourself? Well, the reality is, as a sole trader, it doesn't matter if you take out all the profits or none of the profits, because you're going to be taxed on the business's profits as if they're your own, because you are the business as a sole trader.
Mm.
So it is a simple case of just bank transferring yourself the money, because you can get taxed on the business's profits completely. Now, completely different scenario as a limited company. You are not the business. So from HMRC's eyes, there's yourself, there's the business, there's two separate legal entities. Paying yourself as a shareholder/director of a limited company comes in two methods. You, or three, we'll call it. You either pay a salary to yourself, which gets declared to HMRC, which if you've got other sources of income, you get taxed on. Or you take dividends out. So dividends are a distribution of profits. If the business has no profits, there's no dividends to declare. Third way is if you've introduced money to the company at the start, you can repay yourself that money. Say, for example, you put 400, 500 quid into the business to get it started. Eventually, you can take that money out of the company tax-free. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. What let's say all I can do is really relate it to my own personal experience, where my day job, my salary was about 50 odd grand. So we were already just over the 40% rate anyway. So taking any money out would have been taxed at a higher rate. At the same point, like I say, we had all sorts of implications with child maintenance that we had to consider. I don't know, this might not make the edit because my ex-wife might not like this bit, but we found it just much cleaner generally if we just reinvested the lot every single month. And we're still not needing yet to take out more than one salary. My wife's taken hers out, but we're kind of covering everything, because you've got salaried income, haven't you? Then you've got dividends, which is a kind of different kettle of fish, isn't it?
Yeah. So currently, as of today, this is pre-budget, £500 tax-free dividend. The rents are then taxed at 8.75% if you're a basic rate taxpayer.
Each month, is this?
This is whenever you take the money out. So this one is declared in your personal tax return. You pay the tax on this annually.
Right. Let's see.
Things to take into account is once that threshold is above that £50,000, you're then going to pay 33.75%, which is a massive jump from that 8.75%. Mm. Things to be aware of is that massive jump and your combined earnings if it is above that 50K. Things you can do to counteract that is, if your business is set up with your spouse, is it best? Are they basically a taxpayer? Is it best to have a different share structure if they're involved in the business, to allow them to take more money out of the business at a basic rate tax threshold? Do they have any source of income? Is it best to put them through a salary and maximise their personal allowance of £12,500? Very individual basis, but that's something you consider, is the overall picture of, say, your household and who's earning what and who's not earning, so we can actually maximise that to get the most out of your business tax-free.
Yeah, no, that's great. And then if you were to start talking about hiring your mum, your daughter, your son, whoever, there are national insurance implications there as well, aren't there?
Yeah. £12,500 is when you start paying employers national insurance above that. The common thing is, if they've got children and they want to pay them shit tons of cash, and you're thinking, can I do that? Well, it would be nice, don't get me wrong. The honest answer is, they need to be paid at a given rate of that job. If you used to give it to someone else that you didn't know, how much would you pay them for that job? It needs to be a market rate value.
So you can't pay them 100 grand a year to pack some boxes?
Unfortunately not.
That's fine. And in a previous life as well, I helped roll out the automatic enrollment legislation.
Okay.
So again, there are things as well. If there's certain criteria that if you're over 18, if you're over minimum wage, if you're working in the UK, yeah, you've got to consider your automatic enrollment duties as well.
Yeah, so if you employ someone today, you have 3 months until you need to be looking at a pension for them, and it's going to cost the company 3%. Mm. That's the minimum contribution that the company needs to make. Just something you need to be aware of if someone's on the payroll. If they're a freelancer, it's something you don't need to consider.
No, that's right. And if it's a husband and wife team like ours, and we're both directors, we're director only.
Correct. Director only can be exempt from the pension regulators.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Yeah. On another note, while I was being investigated by the pensions regulator, because that's who I worked for. I worked for the pensions regulator while they didn't like what I was doing. And right in my disciplinary hearing, they went, what about automatic enrollment? Went, whoa, cheeky bastards. Anyway. okay, great. I think we're coming to the end of those sorts of the obvious questions. When we're talking tax year end, there's some confusion, isn't there, about when your actual financial year ends and then when your papers are due. Could you talk us through that sort of process so it's a bit more easy to understand?
Yep. So as a sole trader, you've always got the same tax year. So the tax year starts on the 6th of April until the following 5th. So current tax year started the 6th of April 2024 and will end on the 5th of April 2025. That tax return needs to be submitted to HMRC by the 31st of January 2026. So you've got plenty and enough time and pay any sort of tax and submit that to HMRC. That's the first thing you need to be aware of as a sole trader. As a limited company, slightly different. If you used to incorporate a company today, the end of the month the following year is your year end. You then have 9 months post year end to submit your accounts to the company's house, and 9 months one day to pay your corporation tax to HMRC, which means you'd have completely different financial years and tax year ends compared to sole traders.
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense. What should be included in the average sort of year-end checklist for somebody?
Year-end checklist, stock take. So how much stock are you actually holding for your company? Two things, lower of cost or net realizable value. So what you paid for the products or what you can actually physically sell them at, whatever is lower is the cost, the value which goes into your accounts. It's a key thing people miss out, because they think your year end is end of September. Well, the day before I'm going to buy a shit ton of stock. Is that going to save me tax? The answer is no. Because if you then tell your accountant you got the stock, it's not going to save you any sort of tax whatsoever. So a stock take is essential. Make sure everything's up to date on your accountancy software. I would advise from day one people get accountancy software.
Yeah.
So they've got an idea prior to your year end, what your tax bill is and what they estimate it to be continuously out throughout the year. So you've got money set aside. And keep receipts. It sounds basic, it sounds simple, but keep receipts for absolutely everything. And make sure you're maximizing your expenses. Sit down with your accountant and say, actually, what else can I put through this business?
Yeah. No, that's great. My next question was going to be, what are the bits of advice that you would give generally? But I think we keep coming back to the same bits, don't we? Keep your paperwork up to date, speak to your accountant, lay your cards out on the table, and get to know everything yourself.
Yeah, and I think it's a case of having the confidence or having that open, honest conversation with your accountant. If you don't feel comfortable with them, maybe actually with the wrong person. Because ultimately, they're dealing with your finances. It's a quite an important thing for everyone. And you want to maximize or know someone's going to have the ability and you trust them to, one, act in your best interest, but two, are you maximizing every single penny you can take out of this company to, one, increase your wealth or your living standards, but also minimize the tax you have to pay to HMRC?
No, absolutely. Everyone's got lots of visions of grandeur when they start their businesses. Nobody gets into business because they want to pay more tax.
Exactly. What's the point?
Exactly. So everything seems to be changing a lot. Even in the last 15 years, we've had automatic enrollment and then all of the various phasing changes in contribution rates that have come with that as well. We've also had the new cost it is to start a limited company. We've had the VAT rise. Are you aware of anything else coming down the pipeline, or are we sitting tight waiting for this new budget?
Unfortunately, there is something else coming in. Something called MTD, so making tax digital. So initially, it's going to be affecting sole traders.
Having worked in finances in this country, I can't even imagine how messy this is going to be.
Yeah, so making tax digital, initially, it's going to be sole traders. It's then going to be rolled out to limited companies. Sole traders and landlords earning over £10,000 in revenue per year. Instead of submitting a tax return annually, you're then required to submit a tax return on a quarterly basis. So every 3 months.
Wow, that's keeping you guys busy, isn't it? Bloody hell.
Correct. It means everything needs to be on track and up to date. Yeah. So it's a case of, if you're not on track now, you'll soon fall out of the loop. And once MTD comes into place and you're not up to date on a weekly, monthly basis, you're soon going to have fines and penalties from HMRC, which you don't want to pay because you're just giving money away for free.
Yeah.
That will be rolled out to quarterly payments rather than annual payments for tax returns, and rolled out to limited companies instead of annual corporation tax to quarterly corporation tax. That's yet to be confirmed in terms of dates. MTD is set to come into place in 2026, but that was supposed to happen 2 years ago, I think, and it keeps just getting delayed and delayed.
It's ambitious, man. It's ambitious. People might feel overwhelmed by this kind of topic, and I think conversations like this, I think this is going to be a really useful one. I'm expecting this episode to be one that people keep dipping back to just to sort of break things down. But what's the best place that people can start from when it comes to sort of understanding their financial responsibilities and how it could, through the back door, stitch their business up and they could come cropper?
I think if you're considering starting a business, the first thing is what you're legally required to do and where they should look for that information. I wouldn't advise you to look on HMRC manuals because as an accountant, I find them confusing as fuck.
Yeah.
There's literally hundreds and hundreds of pages. So I wouldn't advise actually speaking to a government body. There's a lot of information out there online. Take, for example, I have a startup Bible, which is what people need to do from day one to get their business up and running, things they need to consider, and things they need to actually get in place to start a business.
That's
from
brilliant.
Bank accounts to applying to UTI numbers for VAT registration, sole trader or limited company, dates you need to submit things to HMRC, and things you actually need to get in place and in order.
Great. How do people find that? Do they sign up with you for that, or is that something that you sell separately?
No, so if they drop me a DM on Instagram, I can give them a free copy.
Perfect. What we're going to do, we put all of your details all over the show notes. I'll make sure that I name drop you. Whether this come, I don't know whether this is going to spread across one or two episodes, but whatever, I'll make sure it gets in. And yeah, finally, if people want to speak to you, if people want to hire you, if people want to learn more about you, where do we find you?
Where do you find me? Main platform is going to be LinkedIn. So Ellis Bennett, ACCA. If you know what ACCA is, my professional qualification. Instagram is EA Accountancy. Those are the two platforms that if you want to speak out, speak to me, reach out, ask me some questions, queries, hopefully happy to answer those. And I'll create some content around the questions that you have.
That's brilliant. Yeah, what I'll do is I'll make sure they're all in the show notes. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, right, I must get a pen and paper, get to the description of this episode and there'll be a link in there for you as well. What we could do as well, we'll say we'll talk about this later if you like, but you could always come in and do like a session in my Facebook group. I've got about 10,000 people in my Facebook group. I think like a live Q&A would be really beneficial.
Yeah. Shoot the shit. And if they've got any questions that they need answering that their accountant or they're too afraid to speak to the accountant about, quite happy to answer those.
Magic. Right. We'll leave it there. Ellis, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. What we'll do is we'll come back in a year's time. When I start getting VAT registered in various businesses, I'll come back and I'll ask you about those as well.
Perfect. Pleasure.
Great stuff. Cheers.
Okay.
Mate. All right. There we go. That's the interview. I think it's really important. I can't say enough, get good practices in place. Get that software on your app, whichever one you use. Get something in place. Get a ledger. Take a notepad everywhere you go with a pen. Start writing things down as you're doing them so you know what can be done. Get a filing system in place. So your receipts and invoices, you do something online, print the invoice, print the receipt, get it in your inbox. Start uploading things month by month because trust me, if you've got a 12-month backlog on your bookkeeping, it sucks. And yes, that's exactly what I've got. But don't do what this guy did. Start putting things in place so you're prepared, your paperwork is good, and should the HMRC come knocking on your door, you can answer every single freaking question and say, wallop, there's the supporting documentation. All right, that'll do. I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you found it beneficial. Let me know what you think. That'll do. Have a lovely week. We're gearing up towards Christmas. We are in the swing of all things Q4 next week. We've got Russ Britton coming in, the Honest FBA guy. Russ is a guy that joined my community, joined my mentoring program, and is a runaway success and a guy that I can look back on in 2 years' time and go, I helped that one. Trust me, he's a blinder. See you on the other side. Take care. Ta-da.
You've been listening to the £200,000 to £100,000 Challenge podcast. Make sure you join us next time for more real talk and some undoubtedly terrible jokes as Des gets ever more closer to saying goodbye poor, hello rich. Just a little reminder that this podcast is for information and entertainment purposes only. It cannot and does not constitute any form of financial advice. We know things are tough for a lot of people right now, so if you need assistance organising your money, please seek the help of a qualified financial advisor.